Great.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Holding On with Holder, where I talk to interesting people about interesting topics. My name is Steve Holder, and I am your host. My guest this evening is Nicola Sperling, artist, project manager, public speaker, political pundit, and YouTube creator, and possibly a few more things. So, welcome, Nicola.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. So for those who don't know who you are, can you just give us a brief summary of who are you?
Sure. So I wear a lot of different hats. I've been involved in politics with the BC Green Party here in the province. I do LGBTQ2+ advocacy work on social media and obviously in real life as well. But I have all sorts of different platforms on social media for getting messages out to the public. I work at a flag shop right now, doing artwork and doing community engagement and creating business ideas. And then I also run a number of businesses doing that, but also working in the construction field. So I've run a construction company since 2011 as a project manager, general contractor, that sort of thing. And now I'm also working with an organization called Tivine, which is a trans organization on Vancouver Island that services all of British Columbia and Canada.
Well, you must stay pretty busy.
I do. I just had to drop out of a few boards because things were getting a little too much.
Okay. Now, when you do public speaking, what do you speak on?
So generally, I'll be invited to speak in schools and I'll talk about LGBTQ2+ issues at large, but often I will focus on how to accommodate trans people in the workplace, how to avoid discriminatory practices as it relates to all marginalized people, and then also talking about trans issues in the healthcare system. So kind of a wide range of subjects, but obviously tailored around LGBTQ2+ people and mostly done in schools, but I also consult businesses around their practices and policies and things like that so that they can make them more inclusive and the best that they can be.
Okay. I love your artwork. I've watched some of your videos and your art is amazing.
Thank you.
Especially those of you behind your couch. I believe it's got a whole wall covered with them.
Yes, I'm at work right now. So otherwise, I would have it behind me again. But I do have, this is one of the pieces that we're printing at work. And that's going to become the new trans lesbian flag. So yeah, kind of exciting. And then my artwork's also going up all the way around this building. So there's going to be lots of it in this kind of big prominent location.
I like to have a backdrop of your work. Is that possible?
Oh, we can print you a backdrop of my work if you want.
Yeah, I would like that. Mm-hmm. So you are a political pundit. Me too. Me too. So okay. Where do you stand on the political spectrum?
Well, I'm involved, like I said, with the BC Green Party. So I would say that my politics are left of center with an environmental focus. So I care a lot about social justice issues and environmental impacts. And then I also just look for a party that aligns most with my interests. And I would say the Green Party aligns with my beliefs most of the time and certainly more than any of the other parties that we have here.
Yeah. So you enjoy talking about politics a bit?
I do. I don't do quite as much anymore because I am still involved with the party. I'm on provincial council and I speak on behalf of the party sometimes, but I used to be a regular on CBC or Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, public radio, just in case your viewers aren't aware. But that was a position that I held for about 3 years. And I used to go on this political panel once a week and talk politics, but I'm not doing that at the moment, so it's a little less in my life.
Okay.
But so I've run in 3 elections so far, so that's sort of, I'm still involved that way too.
Okay. So what do you think about Donald Trump?
I try not to think about Donald Trump.
I understand.
Yeah.
What do you think about the present state of the world?
I think it really depends on which aspects of the world we're talking about. I think there are places around the world that are making positive steps in terms of, you know, those issues that I care about, like social justice and environmental change. And there's other countries that just seem to be moving backwards. So I would say it's a mixed bag, but overall, we're definitely approaching some big issues that are going to affect all of us. Obviously, you know, refugee crisis, for instance, was a huge one lately, and we're going to have an environmental refugee crisis on our hands pretty soon if we don't do something quickly.
Yeah. So have you always lived in Canada?
Yes, I've lived actually in this one particular region of Canada for my whole life.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So do you think things are going to get any better worldwide? Do you see anything good coming around the bend?
I can always hope. I think when you look at, you know, general history, at least in this area of the world, things do seem to progress at a sort of steady rate, and we have our ups and downs, and I'm hopeful for the future, but I think we definitely have areas of the world that I'm not as hopeful for, and we need everyone on board, like I said, to fix some of the issues that we have here.
Yeah. Can we send Donald Trump to Canada? We all take him.
No, we don't want him here. You can keep him.
We don't want him.
No, I can't imagine.
We want to send him to Mexico and make them pay for it. What do you think?
Yes, that's a good idea. You can build a wall around him.
Yeah. I guess he doesn't know they know how to build tunnels. They've been doing that for decades, right?
Or put up ladders.
Ladders, yeah, that works. So have you lost any friends or family to COVID-19?
Fortunately, I haven't. We're not doing all that well right now with relation to Canada, but when compared to at least the states earlier on, we were doing far better. So I think when it comes to knowing people that have had COVID or died from COVID, it's not as commonplace, but I definitely known a number of people that have had it and had quite severe reactions and had to go to the hospital. So yeah. But fortunately, no one died.
I've had, my sister had it, but she got over it, and a couple of her kids had it, but they got over it. I've known a few people that had it, but none of them that I know died from it.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. As you know, Donald Trump denied it for a long time in America, so we had a few months that it just kind of went crazy. Well, he assured us it was under control.
Yeah, I know that. It wasn't handled well.
Yeah. Can we talk about racism a bit?
Sure.
Do you think we're making any progress on the racism issue worldwide?
I like to think that there's progress being made. There's definitely a lot more talk around racism, and I think that's definitely a step in the right direction. And obviously there's been talk for quite a long time. You think about Martin Luther King, obviously, as a very influential person. And I think since then, people would tell you that racism has gotten better, but you would also have some people that would say it hasn't. It's just sort of shifted the ways in which we see it or don't see it. It happens sort of behind closed doors more. It happens in hiring decisions and things like that that are a lot more difficult to track down. It's not someone, well, sometimes it is, but it's not as often someone who's walking down the street just shouting racist remarks. They keep that to themselves at the very least. So I guess in that sense, it's better that it's not quite as out there, but I don't know how quickly it's actually changing. As someone who's not a person of color, it's sort of hard to understand that. Just as before I transitioned, it was hard to understand the hatred that trans people face.
Yeah. So what about white supremacy and white privilege? Do you believe that's a real thing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think privilege presents itself in a lot of ways, and I think people get their backs up when it comes to it because they have this idea that there is only one form of privilege, and it's white privilege. But privilege applies to so many different aspects of life. So if you grew up poor, for instance, you know, then you're lacking privilege when it comes to your societal status and income, and that affects various aspects of your life, like whether you can get a good education, whether you can get a good job, what connections you have, things like that. So I think that when you talk about privilege, you have to acknowledge that there is white privilege. I mean, obviously, if you look at the statistics, white people are being hired more, being put in more prominent positions, things like that, because of racism, because there is that white privilege involved there. And people, like I said, they don't want to acknowledge that privilege. And I think part of it's just that idea that it's only this one form. And also, I think part of it is when it comes to privilege, people in positions of privilege, when you try to create equality or equity, it feels to them like you're oppressing them because they feel like that privilege is just normal and that's something that they're entitled to.
Yeah. I like to ask people about their childhood. Can we talk about your childhood? Is that okay?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. What kind of childhood did you have?
I had a pretty great childhood. I went on a lot of trips, not long trips. We did a trip to Europe when I was a little kid and to Ontario, but mostly it was road trips. So going to the Rockies, going to some mountain, going for a big hike. We would go backpacking, canoe camping. I was involved in cross-country ski racing and soccer. So most of the time I was doing all of that. And I was, you know, straight A student up until high school. And then that was when the sort of issues presented themselves around me being trans, because that was, I mean, that was when puberty started. So that was when things got worse. So yeah, that was basically my childhood. I look back on the very least sort of the elementary school years as being really good. And the sort of early high school years were a mixed bag.
Yeah.
And then things got bad near the end of high school and after that.
Yeah, high school sucked for me too. I hated it.
High school sucked, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't do well in structured learning environments anymore. I mean, I could put in the work. I'm intelligent, so I got my way through you know, elementary school with straight A's, but I just kind of gave up in high school and went this. If I want to learn something, I want to do it on the job, and I want to just get into it and figure it out myself.
Yeah. So how does what you experienced as a child still affect you today?
It inspires a lot of the work that I do in the videos that I'm putting out, the educational content that I put out around what trans people face, that public speaking I spoke about earlier. It informs sort of all of that, because I always take the approach that I want to be the person that I needed when I was growing up. So if someone had even just talked to me about what it meant to be trans when I was growing up, everything would have immediately clicked, because that's all it took when I was older. And these were the same feelings I've been having my whole life. So that's why I'm such a proponent of having education around what it means to be trans in schools, and we have something called SOGI education here, which is sexual orientation, gender identity education. And that's something that I really support. And it's also just, I think, about being the person that I want other people to be, being the person that I think that the world needs in some ways, or certain people in the world need. And that's just what drives me. So I think if it wasn't for that childhood, I wouldn't be doing the kinds of work that I'm doing right now.
Yeah. You mentioned your YouTube videos. I've watched several of them. How many have you done so far?
Oh gosh. Probably 70 or so.
Yeah.
I've been doing them once a week for the last, oh, it's probably been more than that. I've been doing them once a week since, I believe, November, December of the year before last. And then I've had a couple that I put out before then as well.
Yeah. Now, I watched your coming out story. And that was interesting. You mentioned multiple coming outs. Now, I do understand that what you were talking about, but can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So it's really all about who I'm coming out to, kind of the fact that in some instances throughout your entire life, you have to come out at various points, whether it's to healthcare professionals or because you're trying to explain some experience that you had in the past or whatever it might be. So there's all of those sort of small coming outs that you never avoid your entire life. But there's also, I'm coming out in multiple ways because I am both lesbian and I'm trans. So you're kind of coming out to people on both fronts. And then also it was first starting with closer friends and family. Then it was sort of extended acquaintances. And then I was forced out of the closet in 2017 because I ran in politics and there was a miscommunication between the party and Global News and I wasn't out, but they put my face on TV as a trans candidate. And at that point I just went, well, if I'm gonna be public, I might as well get into some advocacy work.
Yeah. So what political office did you run for?
I've run, in 2017, I ran to be an MLA. So we have 87 elected people within the province of British Columbia, and they make up the legislature, and the legislature is basically the government. So it's those 87 people voting on everything that happens. And then we have the same for the country where you've got MPs, members of parliament. So instead of the legislature, it's parliament. And so I've run for provincial election twice, and then I've run for municipal election once.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I ran for US Congress last year.
Oh, wow. What was that like?
It was interesting. I ran as an independent, so I kind of got it from both sides, the conservatives and the liberals. You know, so it's like I was always in the frying pan. But it was interesting. I'm glad I did it, but I don't want to do it again. You know, that's enough for me.
It's fair.
I'll stick with being a pundit.
Yeah, I know that elections really take it out of you.
Yeah,
that's more fun.
Yeah. You mentioned in your coming out story about in the first grade, you didn't feel right and you didn't fit in. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that one's kind of a tough one to talk about because when it comes to the feeling of being trans, it's sort of really difficult to describe. A lot of people think that it's, you know, I grew up wanting to wear dresses or I grew up wanting to play with Barbies or whatever it is. And that wasn't the case. I played with cars. I went out in the alley with my remote control vehicles and jumped them off of things. And I still enjoy things like that. I love extreme sports. I like cars. I like, you know, all these stereotypically masculine things. But in grade one, I started to sort of, people started talking about the differences between boys and girls. And I always was kind of like, why? I seem to relate more to the girls and all of my friends are girls it's just kind of like I'm one of them, but there's also this difference that doesn't seem quite right. And I wasn't comfortable with my body either. And so when we would learn about, you know, women's versus men's bodies, I'm like, oh, that's the one that I should have had. And I was going through all of these thoughts in my head when I was a little kid going, you know, was I maybe a girl in a past life or, you know, something like that. And I just couldn't figure it out. And so it took me ages. I just tried to suppress it because I didn't have an education around it. No one else talked about it. I just thought it was, you know, this wrong thing that I shouldn't feel. So I just suppressed it. And then I just couldn't do it any longer. So I started getting really, really depressed. And my body started changing in ways that I didn't like. And when I was 23, I started volunteering with Vancouver Pride, and that was when someone told me what it meant to be trans. And I'd only ever heard of, you know, trans people being in porn, for instance, because that's, if you try to Google a trans person, or at least if you did when I was a kid, that's all that came up, because that's really all people thought of trans people. So I never identified with that, and that's part of also why it took a while.
Yeah. And you also mentioned in that video that in high school you got seriously depressed. And was that all through high school?
No, I mean, well, kind of. In grade 8 and 9, I just was having trouble fitting in. I guess because you're starting at a new high school, you're trying to make new friends, all of that sort of thing. And I was a pretty awkward kid because I was trying to pretend to be this boy when I wasn't viewing myself as that, and trying to overcompensate by, you know, acting really tough and things like that. So that was definitely a little bit of a rough experience. But then I moved and I thought, well, maybe this will help. Obviously, I had to make new friends again. And I had, at least with the first school, I'd moved over with some people from elementary school, but I didn't know anyone at the new school. So again, I was just this awkward kid, and I made friends with some people that were sort of in the cool crowd. So no one ever really messed with me because I was, I guess, considered one of the jocks, since I was on the soccer team and did all sorts of other sports at the school. And but I mean, I definitely wasn't part of the cool group either. It was just I had this weird middle ground where I would kind of hang out with the arts kids in the drafting room and, you know, do all of the nerdy things and be in band, but then I was also, you know, the jock and all of that. So basically trying to do whatever I can to, I guess, keep busy and then also, like I said, I was doing all of that skiing and that was something that I really enjoyed. So it was, I guess, a break from the depression to go up skiing every evening.
Yeah. Were you ever suicidal? Were you ever suicidal?
I had suicidal ideations. I was never kind of thinking about actually doing it. It was just thinking about it a lot.
Yeah.
And wondering if it was going to get to that point soon and all of that. But since I transitioned, that hasn't even crossed my mind.
Yeah. Now, you also mentioned that you took a trip through Europe once. Was that to get away from the depression, hopefully?
It kind of. I didn't know that's what was going to happen when I left for Europe. I just knew my parents had all of these wild stories from when they went traveling, and I thought I want to experience some adventure as well before I, you know, settle down into a career and potentially am not able to do that anymore. So I went to Europe with a friend of mine in 2010, and we did a 2-month backpacking trip around Europe, and then I came back and I was feeling much better. That trip had sort of gotten rid of my depression. And I thought, oh, great, maybe this has worked and I'm just out of it now. And then a few months later, I started sinking back into it. And I thought, okay, well, traveling gets rid of it. So I started planning another trip. And that time it was a 5-month road trip around North America. And again, it got rid of the depression for a while. Yeah. And then it came back again. And then about a year after that, I found Pride. So that's what got me out of the depression eventually.
So did you make it to the United States any at all?
Oh yeah. So I, on the road trip, I zigzagged down the West Coast, visiting all sorts of different parks, went across the southern states, down to the Florida Keys, up the East Coast, zigzagged around Newfoundland and the Maritimes, back across Canada, kind of jogged up to Edmonton so I could come down through the Rockies and then back across BC. So okay. It was a 56,000 kilometer trip. It was a pretty long one.
Did you come to Tennessee? That's where I am.
I didn't go to Tennessee. No, I was thinking about it. So I have a friend in Nashville, but we ended up not being able to align our schedules. So I bypassed it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So can you share some of your experiences you've had, reactions from people that maybe you don't like trans people? I'm sure you've run into those.
Oh, I mean, online, I run into it all the time. In person, it's extremely rare. In fact, I mean, outside of a Pride event, I don't know that I've ever actually experienced in-person transphobia that was sort of direct. Yeah. I've never had an issue in a washroom with someone. I've never had someone in public say something to me other than when I was just started transitioning. And I think I just looked like a gay boy. And I think that was why they were making fun of me. But there hasn't really been too much. There was my roommate though. So I was living with someone for a little while and that became a bit of an issue and a bit of a tension, I think mostly because of his parents and they didn't want him to associate with a trans person. So we just stopped living together. It wasn't sort of this big blow up or anything like that. But yeah. I think that's probably the only instance. And then also I've just had people that sort of leave my life, don't really say anything, but that just happens in everyone's life. So I don't know if it was related or not.
Yeah. So what do you think about the whole bathroom issue, the arguments over who should be allowed to go to what bathroom or not?
I think it's just silly. I don't know how people intend to regulate bathrooms because, I mean, right now it isn't really an issue. I don't know why people are trying to legislate it, but the argument by the people that do want to legislate bathrooms is that, okay, if you're born, in their words, if you're born male and you should go in the men's washroom, and if you're born female, you should go in the women's washroom. And, I don't use that terminology. We'll say assigned X at birth, whatever the gender is, because there's no way of knowing, obviously, what a person's gender is. Yeah. So you're basically determining what their sex is based on their genitals, and that's not how everyone defines sex. Some people use chromosomes, or there's a number of different ways people might define sex, and they don't always correlate. So it's rare, but there are instances like that that will arise. So that's also part of the reason why I don't use, born, whatever it was, whatever they decided to write on your birth certificate. And then how do you check that, right? If you go, okay, well, we're going to check your ID. Well, ID can get changed. Yeah. So then you have no way of knowing based on ID. Then you could say, well, okay, so we're going to inspect people's genitals. Well, that gets creepy pretty quickly.
Yeah.
At what age do they start inspecting your genitals, and who's charged with doing that? And why would someone want to use a washroom if someone's going to check their genitals, and all of those weird questions. So that doesn't work. And also, even if it was somehow an option, that doesn't tell you anything either, because people have had surgeries and all sorts of different things. So I don't understand it. And the other issue that comes into play is that if somehow you make it all work and you force people to adhere to that, those rules that you want to set, then you're going to have issues of trans men being in women's washrooms, which women are not going to realize these are trans men. They're just going to view them as men and not feel comfortable in the washroom. And then you're going to have trans women in men's washrooms where they're going to be subjected to potential violence. So it doesn't really work.
Yeah. So do you think kids should be allowed to begin the transition process? Or do you think parents should make them grow up first?
No, I mean, I don't think parents should be able to force children to be any gender, whether it's staying the gender that you were assigned at birth or whether it's changing. And that, a parent doesn't know the gender of their child. They have no ability to know that. So I think the parent's job is to connect a child with medical health professionals that can help a child work through those feelings and go, what exactly is making you feel this way? And is this, is this a case of you being trans? And if it is, what are the options? And then the options at that point, if it's a young child, it's really just, okay, so you want to change the clothes that you're wearing. That's really all you do at that point. Yeah. And if that makes them happy, then great. I mean, they're just clothes. And then you get to the age where puberty starts kicking in. And that was when I said I started experiencing a lot of that depression. Once you get to that age, then there's the option for blockers, and that blocks your puberty. And it gives you an extra few years to decide if transitioning is correct, because you need to have proper consent and you need to make sure that a person is old enough to make that decision. So that's why that system is in place, at least here. The systems vary from place to place, right? And you can argue about whether it works or not, but that's the system here. So then they've reached an age where they're able to consent and say, yes, I want to start on hormones and I want to begin my transition. And then when they become 18, then they're eligible to have surgery. Well, they're eligible to really do whatever they want because they're adults at that point. So that's the progress. And for that reason, I say, yes, absolutely. You let a child transition at any age because those steps are in place.
Yeah. Do you ever regret transitioning?
No, I've never regretted transitioning. I have definitely had difficulties with it. I've struggled with wishing I didn't have to transition, but no, I'm definitely, like I said, I haven't experienced the depression in the same way that I had before since I transitioned. And I went through a period of time where it was a little uncomfortable being a woman because I felt like people were judging me or looking at me or whatever that might be. But also I was sort of pushing myself too far into the feminine side of things. And that's just not really who I am. So I started experimenting with sexual orientation and I started looking at wearing, you know, feminine clothes and mannerisms and the way I speak and all of that. And then I realized, well, what am I doing this for unless it's for me? That's the whole point of transitioning, is just to be authentic. So I think it was a good experience to sort of go over there and experience it, but I've sort of shifted back a little bit and I feel like I'm a lot more authentic in dressing in sort of a more androgynous way and not being as focused on the mannerisms and the voice and just being open about being a lesbian and, you know, butch lesbian or whatever you want to call me, and that's fine, because I think one of the important takeaways and part of what I talk about in all of my videos is the fact that there is no like set way that you have to be trans. And it's sort of weird when you get these feminists that will say, you know, women should be able to wear whatever they want, do whatever they want, and then they go, but trans women, like, you're not actually a woman unless you wear a dress and all of this. So there's a lot of hypocrisy there, I think.
Most cis women don't wear dresses nowadays. That's
no, exactly. But I've even heard of therapists in Ontario denying people access to surgeries because they don't wear enough dresses and they don't believe they're actually women.
Yeah. Are you?
Luckily,
at all?
I had a therapist that didn't believe that, and I wore a lot of men's clothes before socially transitioning, and she said, you know, this is fine. There's no problem here because, you know, regardless of the clothes that you wear, you're a woman.
Yeah. Are you concerned that someday you might regret it? Is that something you think about from time to time?
It's something I thought about before I transitioned. It's not something I think about now. I mean, what's done is done. And even if I were to at some point regret it in the future, there's no point. I mean, there's no point trying to focus on that because there's nothing you can do about it, but I don't feel that way. So I'm not worried about that. And I think that comes down to, at least for me, taking it slowly with my transition and taking a while to think about our hormones right. And it took me quite a while just to get on hormones. I discovered I was trans in 2013 and I didn't start on hormones until 2015. And that was because I was taking that time. And then when I got on hormones, the changes are slow. So even then I was able to say, okay, well, if this starts not feeling right, then I could stop them. And everything just started coming together and I started feeling better and better and better and never looked back.
Yeah. Do you think in some way that it's a lifelong process?
Sorry, you cut out just then. What were you saying?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you ever feel like maybe you think that it might be a lifetime process, that you will always be changing the way you feel about it?
Oh, I mean, life is just a process for everyone of changing. Yeah. The way that we operate and the things that we believe in and think about. But I mean, being trans is something that's never going to go away for me. It's something that I'm always going to have to think about to varying degrees. I mean, obviously, with the kind of work that I do, I think about it all the time, but who knows where I'll be in the future. And I think you have to take medication, for instance, the rest of your life. And if you have surgeries, you have to take care of that for the rest of your life. Think things like that, that are constant reminders. But I don't think that it's something that I necessarily need to focus on.
Yeah. So what's been your biggest challenge in your life so far?
I mean, I would say transitioning has been the biggest challenge. As far as challenges outside of that, I think running in elections, the first time I did that, I developed stress-induced vertigo, I had shingles. It was just a whole host of issues. Yeah. And I ran two after that. Those were big challenges. And then I've had transphobes coming after me. So I had J.K. Rowling threaten to sue me. And that resulted in, I was trying to do the math, it was about 10 hate messages a second I was getting. And that, it was up there. It was at least one a second for probably a month or two. And I still have people, you know, coming after me because of that incident that happened now a year ago.
Why do you think people hate?
Yeah, it was a year ago.
Like that.
Sorry?
Why do you think people hate trans people so much? I mean, the people that do. What do you think that is?
I really don't know what makes people hate other people. That's just, I've never been wired that way. No. So I don't understand what motivates someone to hate. I think there's definitely ignorance that's involved. And I think that some ignorant people can be educated, but some people will take that ignorance and use that ignorance to fuel hate, and they're not willing to be educated. And I don't know what allows a person to come to that state. And I don't know if you can ever get rid of that. You just kind of have to keep trying to educate people, I guess.
I think some people just look for reasons to hate or reasons to argue, reasons to build walls, you know. And that's sad.
Yeah, I think religion is obviously a big one that I don't have any problem with religion, but I do have a problem with how hateful people will use religion and interpret it in a way that suits them, and they'll pick and choose bits of the Bible that support them or what they want to believe in.
Well, I'm a Christian, and the Jesus I follow is all about love, you know, and he hang around with a lot of people that everybody told him quit hanging around them people, you know.
Exactly. And a lot of my family are very religious, and whenever someone has used religion to defend transphobia, they've said, you know, they don't represent me, and they're giving Christians a bad name and all of that.
I learned a long time ago that you can't necessarily draw a correlation between somebody's morals and their religion. You know, sometimes the most religious people can be the biggest jerks, you know, and sometimes people that don't even think there is a God can be very, very godlike in their actions, you know? And so people are people, and we all are different.
People are people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there any advice you would like to give to people that are thinking about transitioning or going to it?
I would say do your research. Make sure you're going into it at a speed that's comfortable for you. Make sure that you know what you're getting into. Have plans for how it might affect your life. Kind of create those worst case scenarios and then plan for how you might deal with them. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but it's good to be over prepared in anything that you're doing.
Yeah.
Build support networks. And make sure that you have some resources available to you. So look at local organizations that either act as resources or that can provide you with a list of resources for where you are. Not everywhere is going to be as easy to be trans as here in Vancouver, where we have resources and friendly people and all of that. And also, if you are looking for resources, like you mentioned, I put together YouTube videos specifically for that purpose. So I try to touch on topics that maybe I haven't seen covered anywhere else. And I put together transition timelines, which I know people that are early in their transition or about to start transition will often look at. But I try to include information about the hormones that I was on and how long different changes took. And you can see the time, the actual timeline, instead of just before and after pictures.
Yeah. So where do you see yourself 5 years from now, or where do you want to be 5 years from now?
I have been thinking about this a lot. I went on a long trip last year trying to think about my goals for my 30s because I just turned 30. So I honestly don't know. I sort of stumbled into this job that I'm in right now, and I'm loving it at the moment, but I don't know what it leads to. I don't know if I'm here in 5 years. I don't know if I am, what I'm doing in 5 years here, because this is sort of a unique and ever-changing position that's just really exciting. Before I stumbled into this job, I was planning on running a bunch of my own businesses, basically doing the same thing, but obviously with much less stability. And part of why I like this job is that it allows me to work remotely at times. It allows me to make my own hours. So something that I've been considering is living out of a van, and I could be in the office, I could be traveling, I could do whatever I want, I'd have that freedom. And also it would mean I could sell the apartment that I'm living in and take some of that money to pay for the van and pay off some mortgages and then buy a house up in the Kootenays and have a driveway and a workshop and things like that. And
yeah.
That was sort of the dream I was thinking about before I started here, but now I don't know what I'm planning. I think I want to work on getting my current apartment renovated, because I do my construction work myself. So I've got a storage room for all of my tools in there. I want to try to get my tools out of there somehow, renovate the apartment to give myself at least a bit more space, and then I guess see where I'm at from there, where I want to go.
Well, I'm confident you're going to stay busy. I don't think you're somebody that could just sit around and do nothing.
No, I get depressed if I sit around, so I keep myself busy.
So do you want to tell people about your website and how they can contact you on social media?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at my website, it's nicolasperling.me. So nicolasperling.me. And on there, I've got information about social media. I've got information about my jobs that I do, all the companies that I run and things that I'm involved in. And then if you want to find me on social media, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, LinkedIn, YouTube, everywhere. I believe it's at Nick E. Sperling. So that's N-I-C-E. S-P-U-R-L-I-N-G. It's like nice Sperling. So that's it.
Okay, great. I have enjoyed talking to you, and I thank you for being on my show.
Yes, thank you very much. You brought up a lot of interesting topics, and really appreciate having the time to speak with you.
Okay, maybe we can do it again sometime.
That sounds wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. You have a great evening.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.